Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on hospitals when we come back. You know, with an income of $50,000 a year, you're paying about $7,650 in Social Security taxes if you're self-employed and paying that 15.3%. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 income, and then pay your income tax bill on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of the whole $50,000 twice? Now, you know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of the original $50,000 in Social Security tax, and then they make you pay 17% of the same $50,000 in income tax. That means that you're paying 17% of the $7,650 Social Security tax twice. Now, that's a little bookkeeping trick, and that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from you and from everybody else that pays this tax. Now, what would you think if Sears, Penny's, or your credit card company charged you twice like Social Security and the IRS does? I thought you'd think that's just kind of real special. Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, tax and status is our school on that subject, and that is available on compact disc for adult home education. That's not free. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. You can click onto the email and send us an email request for that free. This one's free, the General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The General Law CD package is free, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, we're talking about hospitals. Hospitals, those miraculous places that you go to save your life when you've had a traumatic automobile accident. Not too long ago, there was a guy who had a head-on accident out here in front of the farm, and it was a pickup truck, and it hit a small truck, and they hit head on, and the guy that was in the truck was, it was in a cab over, and he was stuck in the cab. I mean, he was injured. He was crying out in pain, and they couldn't get him out, and they had to call the fire department over here, you know, and they cut the cab away, and they got the guy out, brought in a medevac helicopter, landed right there on the highway, and loaded this guy up and hauled him off to the hospital and saved his life. You know, time was when a traumatic injury like that would just result in death. Out on the battlefield, you know, the time was when traumatic injuries like that just resulted in death. And that's the bottom line. Now, with modern medicine and modern technology, helicopters, the jaws of life, hydraulics, and, you know, the medical processes and procedures that we have here, at least in this country, in our modern medical marvels, the hospitals, they save literally thousands of lives a year. And I don't deny that, and I'm not trying to run them down. What I'm trying to do is to point out to you that just because you've got a good thing going over here doesn't mean that it's quite perfect. In fact, they're killing about 300,000 a year that don't need to be killed. they could improve the safety margin in the hospitals of America by 300,000 people a year that die every year if they would do some simple things like washing their hands. I alluded to that in the last program that we were talking about this fella from Austria, I believe it was, back in the 1800s, and he discovered that if you wash your hands, you're less likely to spread disease. Hell, my old granny knew that. Why, she wouldn't let me come to the dinner table without washing my hands. You know, much less, you know, going around, you know, in a hospital, you know, from one bodily orifice to another bodily orifice to another bodily orifice in one room after another without washing your hands. I mean, my old granny never went to medical school, but she was a stickler for clean hands. Now, why is hand hygiene so important? Well, the most common vehicle for disease transmission is by way of the human hand. Let me repeat that in case you didn't know that. Here's something that your old granny knew, or your mommy knew, that the most common vehicle for the transmission of disease is by way of the human hand. One-third of the human population is at greater risk of contracting a communicable disease by way of your hand. This population includes children and those with compromised immune systems. Direct relationship between improved hand hygiene and reduced infection rates. For example, the failure to perform adequate hand hygiene is considered the leading cause of healthcare-associated infections and the spread of multi-resistant organisms. Oh, did you get that? Your failure to perform adequate hand hygiene is considered the leading cause of healthcare-associated infections. Now, I already reported to you that healthcare infections in this country come from inadequate hand hygiene, and it infects 75, well, it infects 2 million people, but it kills 75,000 people a year. Doctors, nurses, and other hospital personnel who fail to wash their hands adequately or timely kill 75,000. They infect 2 million. How many is it? Let's take 2 and divide that by 37, and we come up with 5%. 5%. So if you go to a hospital, your chances are 5% that you're going to suffer from a hospital infection. One more neat statistic. If you are one of the 2 million people who are infected in the hospital, you have a 5% chance of dying. That's 1 in 20. Now, that's not great. I mean, you know, think about it. 37 million people go to the hospital. 2 million of them get an infection. Big deal. 1 out of 20. Every 20th person going to the hospital is going to come down with an infection. All right. Of those 2 million people that come down with an infection in the hospital, 1 out of 5, 5%, are going to die from it. Now, you know, kids, when you go to the hospital because you've had a car wreck, you know, take the guy out here, you know, who had this wreck. I mean, the highway patrol was there, and there was two or three of them. The ambulance was there from Gainesville. And the St. John's medevac helicopter was there. There were probably, it stopped all traffic on the highway in both directions for about 3 hours. So I would say, you know, shucks, there must have been 50 cars there. Happened early in the morning. Had to be 50 cars there. It had to be 100 people were involved in that accident. 100 people are involved here. And they load this guy up, haul him off to the hospital. He has a 5% chance of getting to the hospital and coming down with a disease, an infection. And then a 5% chance, if that happens to him, of dying from it. Shucks, man, he's already been hurt bad. He doesn't need an infection. And especially an infection that's not necessary. An infection that is caused by what we know causes infections, and that is wash your hands. Hell, Granny wouldn't let you eat dinner until you washed your hands. Don't you think the doctor ought to wash his hands after he comes out of somebody else's room that maybe had AIDS? Well, that doesn't mean that if he doesn't wash his hands that you're going to get AIDS, but your chances are 5% greater. Now, hospital-induced infections is a serious crime against our nation's patients. Last week, in a New York Times op-ed entitled Coming Clean, former New York Lieutenant Governor Betsy McCaughey, I guess it's McCaughey, it's McCaughey, sorry Betsy if I mispronounced your name, but Betsy McCaughey noted that due to poor hygiene, hospital infections in the United States kill an estimated 103,000 patients every year. Now, you know, I see these numbers, and it's 103,000 in this article. The lowest estimate is 75,000, so I'm going with the 75,000 number. Fair enough? You know, we won't overestimate it. That is, the failure of hospitals to enforce cleanliness rules evidently results in the annual death of more patients in this country than AIDS, breast cancer, and auto accidents combined. All right, so let's take the number of people that die from AIDS, the number of people that die from breast cancer, and the number of people that die from automobile accidents. Well, there's about 40,000 die in car wrecks. I don't know how many die from breast cancer or AIDS. It's the other 60,000, I guess. Those three diseases, which all of you people are aware of, you've all heard of breast cancer, and most of you women are terrified of it, and you've all heard of auto accidents, you know, 40, 50,000 people a year dying in car wrecks, and you've all heard of AIDS. All right. Doctors, nurses, and other professionals in hospitals that fail to wash their hands kill more people by failing to wash their hands than AIDS, breast cancer, and auto accidents combined. Now, I don't know why Katie Couric and Brian Williams don't report that. I thought that was pretty startling. In the last program, I reported to you that, hell, you're safe from the streets of Baghdad 205 times safer on the streets of Baghdad than you are in an American hospital. Now, are these deaths the hospital's fault, or are they inevitable? Well, a comparison with other countries' experience is telling. McCaughey reports that Denmark, Finland, and the Netherlands have been far more successful than the United States in reducing their rates of deadly infections in their hospitals. The reason appears to be a greater willingness to follow cleanliness protocols, including those requiring hand washing, the careful cleaning of hospital rooms and equipment, and the wearing of gowns and disposable aprons by hospital staff to avoid the spreading of pathogens through clothing. Now, here in the United States, the failure to maintain a hygienic environment in most hospitals is such that one in 20 patients contracts an infection during a hospital stay. And even more alarmingly, such infections are becoming increasingly resistant to existing antibiotics. Many U.S. hospital administrators reportedly contend that enforcing cleanliness rules would be too expensive. Did you get that? That would be too expensive. The reason that we don't enforce these cleanliness standards, like wash your hands, doctor, is because it would be too expensive. Let's apply that to the airlines. Requiring airline pilots to retire at age 60 would be too expensive. Requiring airline pilots to keep a logbook would be too expensive. Investigating airline crashes would be too expensive. I don't know what it cost total, but do you remember there was a 747 that crashed out over Long Island Sound back about 1996? It was called, they had a name for that, it was TWA something or other, you know, TWA Flight 209 or whatever it was, but they spent, they went out there, this airplane crashed out over the water, and they went down with diving machines, and they recovered over 90% of the wreckage from the bottom of the ocean. I mean, they went out there with divers, and they got the black boxes back. Evidently, they didn't think that was too expensive. And they spent $100 million over a period of years. I think it was about 3 years. And they went over that airplane. They rebuilt it. They put all the wreckage into a hangar. They took every piece of wreckage. They sifted it. They took all the pieces and parts of the wreckage of a 747. Hell, that's a big piece of machinery. You know that? That's a big piece of machinery. And this thing is in thousands of pieces. I mean, it just smashed in little pieces. They had little pieces there about the size of a 50-cent piece. And they had wires and all that. And they put that whole airplane back together, and they came to a conclusion. And they concluded that the center fuel tank had electric spark in it, and it blew up, and it caused the airplane to blow up. All right. They spent $100 million figuring that out. I don't know. Evidently, we don't, as Americans, I mean, we don't think that that's too expensive. I never heard of anybody complaining and say, look, an airplane crashes and 273 people died. Now, let's just try this out. Let's take $100 million and plug it into our famous Texas Instruments Sharp EL1197G. $100 million. Let's divide that by 273, because that's how many people died in that plane crash. So just divide it by 273. We spent $366,300 for each of the dead passengers on that airplane to find out why that airplane crashed. Evidently, we Americans did not believe. I never heard anybody complain. I'm not complaining about the FAA spending $366,000 for every dead body on that airplane to find out what happened. And that's because by finding out what caused that airplane to blow up and crash, it promotes airplane safety. The airlines are now more careful. The airplane manufacturer now have implemented changes in the wiring in the fuel tank so that that won't happen again. I mean, not that it ever happened very often to start with. As far as I know, it's the only airplane that that ever happened to. But to make sure that it doesn't happen twice or three times and kill 273 people, they spent $366,000 for every dead body on that airplane to find out what happened so that it won't happen again. And they didn't think that that was too much money. Now, for some reason, many U.S. hospital administrators reportedly contend that enforcing cleanliness rules would be too expensive. Excuse me. Hang on a second. My wife, the old battle axe, dumb as a box of rocks, just a girl, for crying out loud, carries a bottle of Purell in her purse. And when we go into the restaurant, we sit down to eat, and she makes me wash my hands. Can you believe it? That's my wife. Hell, I thought I was emancipated when I grew up and got away from my granny. Now I'm married to a woman that makes me wash my hands in a crummy restaurant. And by the way, a bottle of Purell I don't think costs more than a couple of bucks. And it's an anti-bug. It's a disinfectant gel that's in a little pump jar, see? And so my wife carries it in her purse, and we go in the restaurant, and we're tooling around over here, you know. And there's people in the restaurant. People, you know. And these people in the restaurant are preparing our food in the back room. You know, they're preparing our food. And they wash the dishes, and they bring the dishes out, and they don't wear sterile sanitary gloves. And those people that go, you know, they're going around in the restaurant there, you know, preparing your food and stuff. Those people have body functions, and they go to the bathroom. That's right, waitresses, cooks, people working in the restaurant go to the bathroom. Do they wash their hands every time they go to the bathroom? Every time they wipe their little behinds, do they wash their hands? And what kind of diseases do these people have in the restaurants? I don't know. I don't run around asking the waitress, by the way, sweetheart, do you have hepatitis? So when we go to the restaurant, you know, which is ain't too often, you know, it's fairly rare. It's like going to the hospital. It's one of those things that you do because you like to, or because it's kind of fun, or because you need to, but, you know, not don't overindulge. And so my wife carries this Purell. Now, I can't understand why it is that doctors can't carry a little bottle of Purell, you know, in their scrub gowns as they're walking around from room to room. And when they get through with one patient, they walk out and put a little in their hands, wash their hands a little bit, and go to the next room. Surely if my wife can do that, a doctor could do that, a nurse could do that. I mean, hell, you could put a bottle of Purell, you know, outside every hospital room, maybe in the hospital room. It's pretty inexpensive. It's a hell of a lot less than $366,000. Well, how much would that cost us? If we spent the same amount of money on, let's see, we're killing in this country 300,000 people. 300,000. Let's multiply that times 366,000. And I push the equal, and it goes to E. It goes to overload. It goes to the sharp 1197 can't calculate a number that big. Now, we're willing to spend that on airplanes, but we're not willing to spend that on hospital patients because the number's too big. It kind of reminds me of this terrorism crap that goes along. My president, you know, for you people that are living outside the United States, stay the hell out of here. This country's gone nuts. We Americans are absolute looney tunes. We Americans have gone insane. Stay away from here. You'll get hurt in this country. But our president, he comes out, and practically every time I watch him on Katie, he says, "I'm just here to protect the American people." I think our president, honest to God, believes that propaganda. He's starting to believe his own crap. "I'm just here to protect the American people." He wants to protect me. Mr. President, instead of spending $366,000, the next time an airliner crashes, would you send out $2 and buy a bottle of Purell and put it in the hospital? Hell, you could save more lives doing that than you can with your war on terror. Purell, Mr. President, Purell! Hand cleaner! Hand cleaner! I don't know. Now, you know, the president, I'm sure he's sincere. I don't want to run him down. I mean, the man, maybe, honest to God, is just insane, and he actually believes his own propaganda, and he actually believes that he's here to save the American people. And so they were figuring out, well, what do we need to do to prevent terrorists from hijacking airplanes? Well, over in Israel, those Jewish the airline pilots carry guns in the cockpit on the airplane. Now, if you're an American, you stay off of the LL Airlines. It's not safe for an American to fly on a Jewish airliner. And that's because the cockpit crew in those Jewish airliners are all armed with guns, with bullets. We don't do that here in the United States. Instead, we spend $37 billion and create a whole new agency of government called Homeland Security. And then when the airline pilots here in the United States made a timid suggestion, "Hey, why don't you arm us like the Jewish pilots?" My God, our president, the Congress, the FAA all went ballistic. What? Let an American airline pilot carry a live gun on an airplane? No, we couldn't do that. Now listen, they've never had a Jewish airliner hijacked. Did you know that? I was amazed. I saw that number. I said, what? You mean them Arabs, they can't steal Jewish airliners? No, those Jewish airliners, those guys are all armed and dangerous. I said, well, how many passengers have those Jewish pilots killed over the years? I haven't killed any yet. I said, well, how many of them Jewish pilots have went berserk, shot the co-pilot, and crashed the airplane? None yet. But it's certainly a threat, isn't it? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a threat. One of them Jewish pilots, he could pull out his gun, shoot the co-pilot, nose the airplane over, and crash her straight into the ground. That could happen. Boys and girls, I'd feel a hell of a lot more comfortable knowing that the pilot up in the cockpit had a .45 under his armpit than having a door up there, you know, that locks. I just thought I'd throw that out. I don't know. Americans, you know, we feel more comfortable spending $37 billion on cockpit doors and homeland security than we do in spending, what the hell can you buy a 45 for now? $500. I think the last one I bought was $500 for a 1911 military 45 caliber automatic, semi-automatic pistol. And they were real concerned about these guys not being trained. Hell, excuse me, but most of the airline pilots here in the United States, kids, are trained killers. Did you know that? Most of these guys are Air Force pilots or Navy pilots. You know those Navy pilots that are flying those jet airplanes on and off of those aircraft carriers? Did you know that when those guys take off with one of those F-14 Tomcats, that he's got a 45 under his armpit? Did you know that? Yeah. He was trained to do that. That way when he crashes and burns over Iraq, he's got a gun under his armpit, and he was trained how to use it. And in trying to get back, you know, to his side of the line, he'll kill anybody that gets in his way. He's a trained killer, you know. Those Navy pilots and those Air Force pilots are trained killers, and those trained killers are sitting in the cockpits of American airliners today. Did you know that? Yeah, they're already trained. I don't think you have to waste a lot of money training those guys on how to use a 45. And furthermore, I don't believe that anybody can come through a 2-foot door into the cockpit and seize control from three guys that are sitting up there with 45s under their armpits. I don't believe that's possible. I'd like to see that one tested. I just thought I'd throw that one out there for your consideration. Now, for some reason, we can't wash our hands in the hospitals, but we can spend $366,000 to find out why that guy got killed on that airplane. Now, going on, more importantly, it's appalling that financial expense would represent the sole cost registering with hospital officials. You know, a hospital's mission is ostensibly to cure people and save lives. That it would nonetheless be willing to infect and kill patients if such a course of conduct proved cost-effective is sickening. Excuse me, boys and girls, but every once in a while, somebody dies in a hospital. And when those people die in the hospital, they sue the hospital, and hospitals are paying billions, not millions, not spelled with an M. Hospitals are paying out billions, that's spelled with a B, B-I-L-L-I-O-N-S, billions of dollars a year in wrongful death suits from people that die in hospitals because the hospital was at fault. My God, do you know how much hand cleaner you could buy for $1 billion? Hell, you could buy out the Procter & Gamble Company for that kind of money, kids. That's why I'm telling all of you foreigners, stay the hell out of the United States of America. We've just gone plain nuts over here. We can't count. Our president's trying to save us from terrorists. But we can't arm our pilots. And our doctors can't wash their hands because it's too expensive. We can spend billions on wrongful death suits, but we can't buy Purell. But my wife can, and she makes me wash my hands in the damn restaurant. I thought I got away from my granny, only to find out that my wife makes me wash my hands too. Now, if a crummy plumber has to wash his hands before he eats in a restaurant, don't you think the doctor ought to wash his hands after he comes out of a patient's room that has AIDS, for crying out loud? So I tell you, boys and girls, we've just been taken over by the insanities over here. Hey, I've got to give you a reminder here before I go stark raving mad. And that is that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and the archives, and that can be accessed through our website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate, and that's because these authors and publications cited most often here on the Law Hour, they may be hostile. They may be political, religious, or economic. They could be sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. And it may be that their viewpoint is not totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you do hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone. So don't blame anybody else, just blame me. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or the management or the staff of this network or local radio station. So don't blame them. They're just in it for the money. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about hands. Hand hygiene. We're talking about hospitals. Hospital administrators are opposed to hand hygiene because of the excessive expense. Now, the lady that wrote this is this is an article from Find Law. This is a legal news and commentary site. It's called http://writ.news.findlaw.com. Now, this lady is a lawyer, you know, and so we went to the Internet and we're looking for articles here that deal with hospitals and hand hygiene and how many people die and one thing and another and what's the problem. I think that the problem of killing, 300,000 Americans a year in our hospitals is much more serious than killing, I think it's about 100 people a year in our, on our airlines. And we spend $366,000 per victim here in the United States to find out why airplanes crash. Seems like to me we could afford $2 for a bottle of Purell. You know, $2. Seems like to me we could afford $500 for a 45 to give it to an airline pilot to protect us from hijackers rather than $37 billion for homeland security. But then, you know, our president wants to protect us. God bless him. I just want to protect the American people. Well, I've mentioned this a time or two. You know, the president could protect a hell of a lot more of us for a hell of a lot less money, you know, if he'd use his head a little bit more. Anyway, more importantly here, this lady goes on to say, I wasn't surprised to learn of the abysmal state of hospital hygiene because I myself have had the experience of going to a highly regarded hospital in New York City. While pregnant, I became concerned when I felt contractions months before my due date. So, I told my obstetrician that I preferred not to go to the hospital because I found such places depressing and stressful, and because I did not think that a hospital visit would actually help me. So my doctor replied that I should stick to law and leave the obstetrics to him. After all, the obstetrician is the paid professional. Come to find out, he doesn't wash his hands, but he's the paid professional. So the lawyer, now this is the lady lawyer, she says, well, when I arrived at the hospital, I hope she's a lady lawyer, she's having contractions. When I arrived at the hospital, she says, with which my doctor was affiliated, I needed to use the bathroom. There was only one available at the time, and for the next 3 hours during my stay at the hospital, when I entered that bathroom, I noticed a cup of urine sitting on the sink. The restroom also had various blood stains, smudges, and sprinkles of an unknown fluid on the floor. Well, I assumed that someone must have left the cup of urine there recently, and that there had not yet been an opportunity for a member of the hospital staff to pick it up. Now, because the treatment for my early contractions was to administer intravenous fluids, I needed to return to the restroom quite frequently, dragging my IV pole along with me. That cup of dark, yellow, pungent urine was there to greet me every time. Over my 3 hour stay in the hospital, no one bothered to pick it up or to clean the bathroom. Now, as it turns out, urine may not be the only waste product that hangs around at the hospital. Recently, according to Makagi, a non-fatal infection frequently caused by the ingestion of fecal matter made the rounds at New York's Mount Sinai Hospital. How did such a thing happen? Well, reportedly, doctors believed nursing assistants in charge of emptying bedpans and of distributing food to patients did not feel compelled to change clothes between tasks number one and number two. It gives new meaning to the phrase hospital food. All right, now let's pause here for a second, kids. If you were anything like I was when I was a little kid, you couldn't come to the table and eat without washing your hands. Now, here's Mount Sinai Hospital. It's a pretty famous institution. Now, you've got people that work here. Now, people that work here have to deal with bedpans. Okay, it's a given. Bedpans are kind of dirty, and they come out of dirty, nasty people that have dirty, nasty diseases, and that's why they're in the hospital. Hospitals are full of dirty, nasty diseases because they're full of dirty, nasty people who have these dirty, nasty diseases who are being taken care of by, as it turns out, dirty, nasty people who don't wash their hands after they handle the bedpans and then take the patients their food trays. Kids, and my wife won't even let me eat in a damn restaurant, for crying out loud, without washing my hands with disinfectant. Now, I'm not a trained professional, and I've never worked in a hospital. I'll bet you that if I went to a hospital and said, could I get a job here carrying bedpans, I don't think they'd hire me. I don't have a social security number. But I'm smart enough to wash my hands after handling the bedpan before I bring you your lunch tray. I learned that from my granny and my wife. Neither one of them would let me come to the table without washing my hands. I came to the table the other day and I sat down. My wife, old battle axe that she is, she said, "You didn't wash your hands." Got that? Now, here's a lawyer goes to the, you know, one of the prestigious hospitals, and she says, hey, listen, here's my observation. My boy was in the hospital down here in Mountain Home the other day, and my wife made the same observation. She said there was a dirty Kotex. Oh, it wasn't either. It was some other dirty thing that was over there next to the wall under the IV percolator pole over there, sticking in my boy's arm over there. And my wife, fastidious as she is, she couldn't stand it, and so she went over and cleaned it up. She says, been there for 2 days. I said, how do you know that? She said, well, I've been here for 2 days, and there's nobody that's come in here to clean this room that's picked up that dirty thingy over there under that IV pole over next to the wall. It was kind of, you know, kind of hard to get to because there was the boy's bed, you know, and then there's this IV thingy that rolls around on the floor, and it was over behind that IV thingy. So you got to move the IV thingy to get to this whatever it was on the floor over there. That was my wife's observation. Said, this is a dirty, filthy place. Do you know that if they ran the Holiday Inn like they run the Mountain Home Hospital, they'd be bankrupt? Nobody would go to a filthy cesspool like that. Listen to this lady over here. She says, as it turns out, the urine may not have been the only waste product that hangs around at the hospital. Recently, according to McCarty, a non-fatal infection frequently caused by the ingestion of fecal matter. Do you know what that is, boys and girls? That's number two. It's the bad stuff. It's not number one. It's the number two stuff. Highly toxic, by the way. Reportedly, doctors believe nursing assistants in charge, not the registered nurses, now it's the nurses' assistants. It's the $9 an hour guys that they brought in to replace the nurses. Remember that story? They don't wash their hands either. but it even gets better than that. What does the law have to do with any of this? Well, it's a crime to kill people, and even without intending to do so, 103,000 hospital-induced infection deaths is therefore a lot of crime. That's the legal implications of medical misconduct. Now, in New York State, for example, a person is guilty of criminally negligent homicide. When? With criminal negligence. Not intent. Just carelessness, negligence, he causes the death of another person. A person, in turn, acts with criminal negligence with respect to a result or to a circumstance described by a statute defining an offense when he fails to perceive a substantial and unjustifiable risk that such result will occur, or that such circumstances exist. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that the failure to perceive it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care that a reasonable person would observe in that situation. Did you get that, kids? Now let's back up here to the first page. Many U.S. hospital administrators reportedly contend that enforcing cleanliness rules would be too expensive. Putting a bottle of Purell and enforcing the use by the nurse assistants who are changing bedpans and delivering food trays, so say these hospital administrators, would be too expensive. But in New York's Mount Sinai Hospital, under New York law, for example, a person is guilty of criminal negligent homicide, for crying out loud, when you knew or should have known that the conduct would injure somebody. Hell, kids, we've already got the laws on the books. You know, you don't need to go to Congress and petition, oh, we need some more laws. Hell, you got 2.5 million laws now that you can't follow. The hell do you need any new laws for? You can't implement the laws that you've already got, and particularly the laws of common sense. Surely these people changing bedpans have to know something about germ theory. I mean, hell, I couldn't have got out of the first grade if I hadn't known that you can't put your lips on the drinking fountain. course, that was back in the 1940s when we still had some education going on in American schools. Now, it could well be that we don't have that kind of fundamental education going on in our public schools today, and it could well be that these nurse assistants don't know anything about germs. They don't know about any connecting link between bedpans, fecal matter, and lunch trays. Maybe there's a total disconnect there. I don't know. But my granny didn't allow any disconnect when I came to the dinner table. My granny wouldn't allow me to go to the bathroom, wipe my behiny without washing my hands. And boys and girls, I was taught and trained to wipe my behiny without getting any fecal matter on my fingers. And I'm an old man, and I can still wipe my butt without getting any fecal matter on my fingers. And I still have to wash my damn hands. My wife insists on it. Now, can you believe that in a hospital? I mean in a hospital. In a state like New York that actually has laws on the books that say we ought to put people in jail for criminal negligent homicide. For doing such acts as this, you know, carried to its logical conclusion. I'm a nurse's aide. I come in and I change your bedpan. I don't wash my hands. I know that I should wash my hands, but I'm too lazy. So I then go deliver somebody's lunch tray. On the lunch tray, I had a little fecal material on my fingers and got on the lettuce. The guy eats it. He comes down with a deadly disease and dies from it. Did you know that's wrongful death? Did you know that's negligent homicide for a nurse's aide to do that? I don't know, kids. That's why I tell you foreigners, stay the hell out of here. For your own safety, stay the hell out of the United States of America. You soldiers over in Iraq, stay there. You're safer there than you are here. 205 times safer. You soldiers in Iraq, don't leave Iraq. Get your wives, your mothers and fathers, your sisters and brothers on an airliner. Get them the hell out of America and get them to Iraq, where they will be 205 times safer in Iraq than they are in Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. Hell, I don't hear Katie Couric explaining that. I don't hear my president trying to save the American people by evacuating America's hospitals and shipping them off to Iraq where they would be 200 times safer there. I don't hear my president saving Americans and protecting the American people there. Do you? You know, I would attribute that to the president being stupid. President Bush is not stupid. He's criminal, but he's not stupid. Now, those nurses' aides up there in Mount Sinai Hospital, they might be stupid. Changing bedpans without washing your hands has got to be incredibly stupid. When I read things like this, I say to myself, can this be going on in a first world nation? I could understand this in Uganda. Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. You know, if you're talking about Africa. But in the United States of America? In Mount Sinai Hospital? Reported, nonetheless, reported by Find Law by a lawyer, for crying out loud. A female lawyer, pregnant female lawyer. Legal implications. All right. The act or omission distinction provides no refuge for doctors and hospitals. Now, if you're a victim of this, I want to share this with you. I'm running a law school here. I run a law school. And I'm telling you right now, stay the hell out of the hospital if it's at all possible. But when you go there, make sure that you're gathering all of the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. So that if you're injured in the hospital or your loved one is injured, make the bastards pay. Make them pay, boys and girls. And you can do that. And it's the solution in America, because if the people in the hospitals believe that a bottle of Purell is too costly and expensive, we can spend $366,000 per victim of an airline crash, but we can't spend $2 for a bottle of Purell. I say, make the bastards pay. That's why I'm called a litigious person, I guess. I mean, if we can't have reason, logic, and common sense, I guess the next best thing is getting paid. So, but it isn't the failure to enforce hygiene rules, an omission rather than an act, required for criminal liability. No. Granted, the failure to wash your hands or enforce hygiene rules alone is an omission. But the invasive treatment of patients after touching infectious agents and without cleaning one's hands or changing one's clothing is most certainly an act. And I want to tell you, boys and girls, it's not just the nurses' aides, it's the doctors. The doctors, they're not washing their hands either. Consider the following analogy. A man turns on the gas at night in an apartment whose windows are all closed. In that same apartment, another person is asleep in one of the rooms. The man leaves the house without turning off the gas. The failure to turn off the gas may seem like an omission if viewed in isolation. But because the man introduced the gas into the person's home in the first place, his exiting the apartment without turning off the gas is at best an act of criminal negligence with respect to the unsuspecting sleeping person. That's the legal ramifications of that act. Now, boys and girls, let's pause here for a moment. Let's go back to the bedpan. Shall we? Let's go back to the bedpan. Surely, hospital administrators, doctors, nurses, registered nurses must know about germs. Surely, when people graduate from the Harvard Medical School with letters after their names, they've heard about germs, haven't they? Okay. Now, these people become hospital administrators. I mean, the administrator of Mount Sinai Hospital, you know, isn't some crummy plumber out here in Isabella, Missouri. He's got to have a degree after his name. He's got to be a medical professional. He's got to be a doctor, doesn't he? And now, the guy that's running the hospital says it's too expensive to enforce cleanliness in a hospital? I mean, come on, kids. Not only would I advise all of you foreigners around the world to stay the hell out of the United States of America because of our rampant insanity in this country, I would recommend you Americans that still have any degree of sanity left, get the hell out of here while you're still alive, before your president saves you, before your president protects you. I mean, we're suffering from lunacy over here. I can hardly read this kind of crap. I don't understand how in the hell Americans can read this. This isn't something that's, by the way, being held as a top secret from the national or by the National Security Agency. Hell, this is on the internet, for crying out loud. All you gotta do is go to Google and punch in hospitals. And then if that doesn't gag you from that point on, you are terminally insane. Just totally out of it. Lost your mind. Now, death by physician. The killing of patients by doctors who do not make a priority of cleanliness is an old problem. Indeed, as Sherwin B. Newland wrote in The Doctor's Plague, Germs, Childbed Fever, and the Strange Story of, now here's this guy's name, it's Ignak Semmelweis. I gotta spell this for you. Ignac. And his last name is Semmelweis, the 19th century obstetrician in Vienna, spread deadly puerperal fever. I don't know what the hell that is. Puerperal fever, known also as childbed fever, to large numbers of obstetrical patients. They did so by resisting a simple protocol recommended and used with great success by Dr. Semmelweis of washing their hands with disinfectant before examining any woman in labor. Many doctors, in fact, delivered babies after performing autopsies on women who had died of this puerperal fever. Childbed fever, without cleaning themselves in between. Though midwives made a point of washing their hands when they helped women deliver their babies, and accordingly saw very few cases of childbed fever, the supposedly more professional physicians thought they knew better. And as we have learned so many times before, arrogance and stubbornness can be as dangerous as malice. When district attorney's offices consider what crime to turn to next, they might consider the inadvertent biological warfare taking place in many of our nation's hospitals as a good place to start. Hey, let me second that. Hey, you prosecutors out there, you know, when you get to a point where you know you haven't got anybody else to prosecute, instead of prosecuting some guy out here because he didn't buckle his seatbelt, or because he was speeding, or he didn't pay his child support, have you thought about going down to your local hospital? Have you thought about taking a look at their records and seeing how many people have been killed lately down here through infection, iatrogenic disease, or bad drugs? Have you thought about, you know, maybe some real crime like negligence? I mean, if you could get these people to wash their hands in the hospitals, you could save a lot of lives, you prosecutors out there. You're not going to save anybody by fining them $300 for failing to buckle his seatbelt. But, you know, you could save a lot of people's lives. Hey, Mr. President, you know, you could save a lot of people's lives over here if you'd get off this terrorist crap and get onto something intelligent. Hey, Katie and Brian, why don't you report some real news over here? There's a lot of people dying in this country. They're dying in this country at a faster rate than they're dying in Iraq. Not to minimize, you know, for you people are going to send me an email and say, well, you're totally insensitive, Gordon, because people are dying in Iraq and you don't care. Well, it's true, you know, but when you compare, you know, when you compare 300,000 people dying every year in American hospitals with about 3,000 Americans that have died in 4 years of war over in Iraq, I'd say 300 to 300 is kind of incomparable. You know, just looking at numbers like Joe Stalin. It's just a statistic. And I told you that when my daddy died, it took me 3 years to get over it. It was a tragedy. When my grandmother died, it took me 3 years to get over it. It was a tragedy. When 250,000 people died in that tidal wave over in Indonesia, to me it was just a statistic. It's the way life is. I didn't make it that way. I'm just a reporter reporting. And so take aim and take warning. We got one more program in this series. We'll bring that up next time. I'll take a look at the Bible and I'll show you what God told you you ought to be doing to start with to save your life from the hospital. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you're listening or have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, we have a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.